It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. At 1:45, where are we at in society? I play a conversation from some conversations I had on the South by Southwest red carpet with the guys from The Kids in the Hall before the premiere of their new Amazon Prime documentary. At Flex 30, we'll tell you about tonight's Wednesday Night Flex, of course, program happening later this evening. And in mere minutes, it is our chat with the great Justin Wells of Inside Texas and On3.com. I'm Trey Elling. Cameron Parker is behind the glass, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two getting started here. In addition to Wednesday Night Flex at 7, you got 8 o'clock with Fight Night tonight, and 9 o'clock at Sports Guys Talking Wrestling. After Rod and Harge get done with Ball Don't Lie, they will hit you at 3 o'clock like they normally do. Thanks to you for being with us. We will get into some Mavericks and Warriors talk with our next guest. But right now, if you want to go to hornfm.com, you can vote on the poll. The only result... Sorry, results that have not gotten votes. Nobody has voted for Mavs in a sweep, and nobody's voted for Warriors in 7. But everything else has gotten at least one vote. Mavs in 7 is the most popular vote right now on hornfm.com. So go on in there and vote in the poll. We'll find out his predictions, and we will get the latest on the Jordan Addison thing right now. On the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline, he is Justin Wells. Check out InsideTexas.com, On3.com for the latest on that story and anything involving the Longhorns. He's at JustinWells2424 on Twitter. Justin, how are you?
Hey, now. I'm doing pretty well, gentlemen. How about yourselves?
Man, we are doing good. We're trying to decipher emojis from coaches and what they might mean. Comments from coaches, comments from teammates. It's a modern college football world, Justin.
Sure. if you decide to go down that road, brother, have fun.
Oh, my God.
Don't wave when you come back.
Yeah, right.
That is, you know, I don't know what these emojis mean. I couldn't tell you what these things mean. You know what, to be totally honest with you, I don't think some of the coaches know what they mean either.
I think that's probably true. I think that's absolutely true. So let's see if we can dig into what we know more than what the emojis are saying. For Longhorn fans that are still holding out hope for the Jordan Addison thing, lay it out for them with Jordan Addison. We talked to you last week about obviously the visit that he had here in Austin. After that, after we talked to you, he headed out to USC. So you pick it up from there and let us know where it is today.
Today, it looks like he's still likely going to see Alabama soon, maybe this weekend. There's been talk about the potential of him going back to Pitt, but from what Bobby Burton and Eric Nolene reported this morning, that doesn't look as likely. You know, this recruitment's kind of funny. I talked about it on the YouTube show the other day with Bobby because, you know, when we first heard that Addison was coming in, coming out, you know, my first thought is, well, you know, Brennan Marion's connection to him and coming to Texas would, you know, that would be a nice little marriage. But it didn't appear that Texas was going to be in the front runner. It looked like USC and Alabama and whoever else wanted to jump in the mix was going to be a little more important. And then time went by and he took a visit and then a little more time went by. And now we understand that Texas is really in this. Like, this is something we're watching on a pretty regular basis right now. We're having to check and double check on sources daily because Jordan Addison really likes Texas, guys. And I think he really likes Brennan Marion. I think he really likes the idea of catching touchdowns from Quinn Ewers and Hudson Card. And I think the Horns, even, you know, if you're a Texas fan, you should be ecstatic with the wide receiver room as it stands right now. I mean, the upgrades have been more than marginal. They've been great. You add a Jordan Addison to the mix, and this sucker gets nuclear because now you're looking at 4 or 5 NFL skill guys on the offensive side of the ball alone. And when you give Sark and his you know, his group, that type of weaponry, he's going to score a lot of points, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch if I'm a Texas fan.
Hey, Justin, if Jordan Addison, and this is obviously a far-fetched hypothetical right now, if you were to end up joining this roster, how do you think that would affect playing time?
I think it would probably affect I think they would run more four wide, obviously. I think he would probably play multiple spots, maybe, you know, the H, probably the X, but I think you would probably see more of him and maybe a little less of a Jordan Whittington, or maybe a little less of, I mean, there's only so many spots. And you're talking about a guy that was the best receiver in the country last year. And so that's another thing. You know, it's not like this room needs it so much. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, no, Texas doesn't need a Biletnikoff Award winner to play receiver. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they've got a good group of guys in there right now that kind of know their roles and it's established. And so if I'm a fan, this is house money. Because you know going into 2022, receiver's going to look good, but you also have to – Sark has to prepare for injuries. He has to prepare for things that unexpectedly could happen. And that's why you have to constantly churn the bottom of the roster. And if that means adding a Jordan Addison, there's going to be a few reps taken from other guys, from veterans, from dudes that have been in the program for a while. But that's part of the business. This is big-time college football. Jordan Addison is a big-time talent. And you just, you know, let Sark figure it out. Because I think what you'll see is just more of finding the mismatch. If you put three or four of those guys on offense out there, from Bijan to Xavier to Nayor to Whittington to Addison, guys, you know, the defense is going to have to pick their poison. And I think it just gives Sark that much more opportunity to find these mismatches like he did at Alabama and other places and exploit every DC that they play this year.
That's interesting that you mentioned Jordan Whittington's name, Justin, because thinking about it and him as serving as sort of a quasi-sixth man on the football field role, I almost like that more for him than I do as a starter. Like, I know that he can be a great player, but at this point, I'm okay with maybe limiting his touches a little bit to make sure he's out there as healthy as possible for as long as possible.
And that's understandable. You know, Jordan's had some injuries. Whittington's had some injuries over the last few years, and that's something he's had to overcome. And maybe that's better for him long term. I do want to make it absolutely clear: Jordan Whittington has earned the right to start.
I don't doubt that either. It would be like a 3A and 3B thing.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I just wanted to make it clear to the listeners that I feel like Jordan Whittington, I'm a huge fan of that kid off, on and off the field.
Absolutely.
But like I said, Sark has to prepare for the unexpected, for injuries and things of that sort. You never know what's going to happen. You know, 2 years ago, they had a true freshman hit campus and absolutely dominate the wide receiver position and every DB in the program. And then he went down with an injury 3 weeks into camp in Troy Amirier. So you have to prepare for all those things. And so with Whittington, if that meant him getting a little less reps, but that keeps him healthier, and that means he's more productive and he plays a full season, that's a win-win in my eyes.
Completely agreed. We're speaking with Justin Wells of InsideTexas.com, On3.com. You mentioned the YouTube channel a couple answers ago. You can actually search for that on YouTube at Inside Texas. The actual name, though, is On Texas Football. Justin, one more thing on the football side before we switch over to the Mavericks, and that is Fox announcing that Texas-Alabama in Week 2 will be on Fox, leading to a lot of Texas fans believing, and I'm kind of in that category, that Fox is going to try and stick this in that big noon kickoff. And for me, this is a bit of a trigger because I understand why Fox zagged when everybody else was zigging in terms of programming and where they're putting the big games. I really don't like that a lot of big games are happening first thing in the morning. One of the things that makes college football special is those big time matchups happening under the lights. How big a fan are you of the waiver going around, the petition going around right now from Texas fans, pretty much begging Fox to put this game at 7 o'clock at night?
I think the waiver's silly. I think it's got a whopping 500 signatures. I mean, come on, guys. This petition's not going to do it. Waiver's not going to do it. Fox knew what they were doing. You know, Joe Cook wrote a great story about this yesterday at InsideTexas.com, and I didn't realize that, you know, half of the games last year that, you know, were the most watched on that weekend were on Fox in that big noon spot. And I didn't realize that. And so I can see where Fox is coming from. I can also see where everyone else is coming from. Nobody is trying to play football in a pressure cooker for 4 hours starting at 11 o'clock or noon in the morning. I'm with you. I love a 2:30 kickoff because at least by the time you're done, you get home and you can watch a little football at night. I love the night kickoff under the lights. Kids, you know, fans have been partying all day. They are revved up and ready to go by that time, by 7 o'clock. They're borderline, you know, just ready. They're ready to rock. But I understand what Fox is doing. And you know what? If it gives Texas an advantage in any way, if the heat, you know, being used to that, you know, your body, if Texas finds an advantage in any of this, maybe it is the 11 a.m. kickoff. Maybe it is catching an Alabama that might be sleepwalking through the first half. Maybe it is trying to get out to a big lead and understand that the bigger that lead earlier, the more that crowd is going to get revved up. And if you go up 21-7 on Bama in the third quarter, I don't think any Texas fan in the world is going to give a damn what time it kicks off.
Talking with Justin Wells, Inside Texas, on3.com. Justin's also a Dallas area fan like me and many of you. Justin, it is time for the Western Conference Finals tonight, Mavs and Warriors. Let's start with your prediction. Are you picking the Mavs to win this series and go to the finals?
Well, apparently not, because when we started this conversation 3 weeks ago, I had Utah winning in six. We didn't think Luka was going to be playing in that series, or very little at the most.
Uh-huh.
With the injury in the last game of the season, then Phoenix came through and they go up 2-0, and I had Phoenix winning in six before that series because I just felt like Dallas was outmatched. They were outmanned. Phoenix had more firepower, more experience. They had been there before. They were coming off a finals trip the year before. Now we get Golden State. Now I'm going to say that. Let me preface this with this. I've had Golden State winning the title this year from the beginning of the season. As soon as you get Klay and Steph back and Draymond together, I mean, those guys, they know how to do it. And now Jordan Poole has turned into a pretty dadgum good scorer and guy that they can rely on. And so now Golden State is formidable to me. You know, I think Golden State's the best team in the NBA. I don't see Dallas winning this series. I mean, and you fully understand them. Nothing would make me happier. But it's going to be Golden State in six. I think Dallas might sneak one out of Oakland. I think Golden State's going to come to Dallas and sneak one out of American Airlines Center. And so, but it's just going to be so difficult, and I'll tell you why. Klay Thompson's the key. Klay Thompson is absolutely the key. And the reason is he's so good on both sides of the ball. Everybody knows about his shooting. Everybody's known that. But he's also an incredible defender. He is going to wear Jalen Brunson out. That's going to happen. And so that's going to be, to me, a mismatch that benefits Golden State. They're going to throw a lot of doubles and a lot of traps at Luka. And that actually kind of, I think, in some ways can benefit Dallas, because Jason Kidd's done a great job with the rotation and getting guys in and out that play well together. Reggie Bullock is going to be a guy that's probably going to, you know, head up on Steph Curry, and he's a good defender. He's going to do his job. But, man, it's hard to pick against Luka right now. I don't know if there's a guy playing better basketball. Him and Jason Tatum right now playing the best basketball right now. And Luka's so much fun to watch. He has grown and matured over the last 3 or 4 years, guys. And you still see that young and mature every once in a while, but now he's confident. And I think we're starting to see a sign of Luka that's dominant. We're seeing a bully. We're seeing a guy that is easily self-motivated. And after the Phoenix Suns guards, Devin Booker and Chris Paul, weren't very nice to him, didn't say very nice things after going up 2-0, kind of rejected him as an all-star and as a baller, he took it personal. And so, you know, I don't think Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green are going to go that route. if you've heard both of those guys talk, Luka and Draymond have a tremendous amount of respect for each other. But Golden State and six. I'd love Dallas to keep this crazy train going, because I think the winner of this series is going to win the NBA championship. I think the winner that comes out of Golden State and Dallas is going to win the title. And so I would love nothing more to see Luka continue the streak. And they're playing well. They're confident. They're playing the defense they played in Game 7 against Phoenix. If they do that, man, this is going to be a fun series.
Justin, I'm going to admire you for making sure to stick with the sports superstition of picking against the Dallas Mavericks. Whether or not you really believe it, it sounds like you do, and so we're going to put you on the record for Warriors in six. The Luka thing is fascinating, too, with Draymond Green, because Luka has obviously not only proven himself to be one of the best basketball players on the planet at such an early age, but also maybe that adept at getting in other guys' heads, too. I'm curious to see some of the circles that he tries to play around Draymond Green, a guy who is easily irked and oftentimes does things in return that cost his team in the moment.
They're very similar in that. You better believe that. Do I get upset when I see Luka whining too much? My goodness, yes. And it's the same thing with Draymond Green. Any fan outside of Golden State thinks Draymond Green is cheap. And, yeah, he's definitely known for some cheap shots. He's also one of the best basketball players in the NBA. And so that threesome that they have is just so formidable. And then you got Jordan Poole and stuff. But, you know, Luka, we're learning about this kid. There's a Jordan aspect of that, finding every little self-motivating factor to push you through each time. And Luka will do that. He'll get in your head. He'll mess with you, especially when you egg it on, especially when you mock him, especially when you taunt him. It was almost like Phoenix didn't respect him. And that's, I think, going to be the difference. I think Golden State fully respects him. Golden State fully sees what this guy can do and trying to keep it on as level ground as possible. But I love Luka's answers after Game 7. They said, you know, Luka, did you know you had as many points as Phoenix did at the end of the half? Most players, man, no, I didn't. That's a cool stat, and I had no idea. Luka's answer, of course I knew. That's cold-blooded, man. That is Rick James cold-blooded.
Yeah.
And so I can't wait. This is going to be a great series. I liked the game last night. I think Boston and Miami is going to be fun. I think, without Smart and Horford for a bit, that really hurts Boston. I think that's going to be a fun series. But, dude, I'm playing with house money as a Mavericks fan, and I really do think Golden State's the better team and will win. But you know what? Let's have fun all together.
So last question, Justin, still sticking with the Mavs here. Obviously, Luka is the most important player in this series for Dallas. Seems like Jalen Brunson is the obvious number two. You need that second score. Who, in your opinion, is the third most important player on the Mavs roster in this series?
And that's going to be Dorian Finney-Smith. Hmm. The reason why is, you know, the casual fan would say Spencer Dinwiddie. But people didn't realize the games before Game 7, Spencer was lights out at home, couldn't hit water if he was in a boat on the road. And so Dinwiddie can get a little too hot and too cold for me. Now, when he's hot, he's feeling it. I like Dorian Finney-Smith because of what he does on both sides of the ball. He's going to hit the open three. He always makes that extra pass, especially when they're reversing the ball to the other side. He always makes that extra pass. And he's a great, he's a good defender, and he's a good rebounder. He's the guy that role should be Tim Hardaway Jr. And if you watched Dallas any this year, you knew that. But you know, he's out for the playoffs with an ankle injury, and so Finney-Smith had to step up. And I guarantee you, the Mavericks are so happy that they re-upped his contract during the season this year, because Dorian, in addition to Jalen Brunson, both are going to see a pay. You know, Brunson's going to see a big payday. Dorian Finney-Smith would have seen one if he would have, at the end of this offseason. So, to me, that's going to be a big guy. I would say Spencer Dinwiddie in certain circumstances, because he's got so much playground to him. And when he gets hot, I mean, he's going to stroke. I did not expect to see that Dinwiddie come out in Game 7 on the road. To me, it's not going to be Spencer, though. It's Dorian Finney-Smith. he's going to be tasked with trying to keep up with Clay, keep up with Jordan Poole, and probably, you know, Kleber and Powell will have their mixture with Draymond Green in the paint. But you know what's funny? It's small ball at its best. If you like small basketball, that's Dallas and Golden State. This neither one of these teams own a center. Yeah, Boban plays for Dallas. No, I'm telling you, this is and my colleague, my main man, Ian Boyd called it space ball, and it's similar to what they talk about in football with the spread and in the space air, you know, flyover football. It's similar to that. It's like playing football on grass or basketball on grass rather. Yeah, I love that it's small ball. This is going to be such a fun series, guys.
It's going to be interesting. Game one coming up tonight. That is Justin Wells, Inside Texas, on3.com. Check it out there and also at Justin Wells 2424 if you're looking for your Longhorn info. Justin, we always appreciate it, man. Enjoy the start of that Mavs series. We'll check in with you next week.
Nothing but love, guys.
Thanks,
good
brother.
Good stuff there. He is rooting for the Mavs like I am, but picking Golden State to win just like I am. Maybe we're both trying the reverse osmosis there. All right, coming up next, we'll talk a little high school sports. We'll tell you how you can go see some of the best football players in the area this weekend, and we'll tell you which one of them is going to be in this studio tonight. Don't move. It's the Horn. Kind of back to where we were earlier. Because this is also a great Beatles cover, but a great original as well. All right. Please, Mr. Postman. Trey, you got a guess on this? 60 Soul Day from Cameron.
I guess I can't go Twisted Sisters for a while. Twisted Sister, Pointer Sisters is what I meant.
You can't go Pointer Sisters. No, it's well before that.
I don't know. I'll have a good one.
My guess is the Shirelles.
The Marvelettes.
The Marvelettes! Damn it!
So close.
Marvelettes. Dadgummit. Good song. Great cover. Another one, man. The Beatles did good covers back then. They picked great songs. They did good covers. The originals are great. The Marvelettes. Barrett Strong with Money. I did not realize he was the original for Money. And then James Brown got us started today. Cameron's going with 60s Soul on his way back Wednesday today. That's a great little song right there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so go check out the Marvelettes if you like today at some point. All right, we've been talking basketball. Mavs getting ready for game one tonight of the Western Conference Finals. Miami is up 1-0 on the Eastern Conference side of things as well. Plus, there is always football to talk about. We've been getting you the update on the Jordan Addison story. Still no choice. Still no official decision yet. USC and Texas are definitely in, and there's still discussion of, is he going to visit Alabama? Are there any other teams involved? But nothing has been scheduled as of this moment. No reports out that he's for sure going to visit Tuscaloosa. So we've gotten you that update as well. There's some other football we can update you on. Let's get you our Flex 30 segment. Talk a little high school sports.
Flex ATX for the best high school sports coverage. Listen to the Horn and go to FLXATX.com.
And if you hit that website or if you go to hornfm.com, you can find the full schedule for this weekend's 7-on-7 event. The SQTs is what the kids call it, state qualifying tournament for the 7-on-7. Two teams will advance to College Station this weekend to the big 7-on-7 that happens in June. So you can see the schedule right there on the website, from that Lake Travis Cedar Park game at 8:30 in the morning all the way down through the Bowie-San Marcos matchup at 8:30. They go 8:30 through 10 on the preliminary stuff, and then the qualifying round games, the two championship games, happen at 11. So it's this Saturday at Lake Travis High School. And if you know the area well, you probably know the name Jaden Greathouse from Westlake. But tonight, on our Wednesday night Flex show with Zach and Snoop and the crew, they're going to introduce you to one of his teammates, and that is Keaton Kubeka, the wide receiver from Westlake. And Trey, I'm told he is a 6'5" wide receiver. You know I'm a sucker for a tall wide receiver. Love the taller side of the wide receiver game. 6'5".
With a quarterback, there is usually that too tall stature.
Right.
That Ryan Mallett stature, if you will. What's that number for wide receivers?
That's a good number. That's a good question.
I think 6'5 is close to the limit.
I think if in both cases, if I hear 6'7 or more, I'm a little concerned.
6'7 or more in high school, you're like, oh, well, hopefully he puts on good weight because this guy needs to be a tight end at the next level.
Right, that would be a little concerning. Last year at Westlake, my man Snoop Daniel, nice enough to throw me some stats. 42 catches, a little over 700 yards, and 13 touchdowns last year at Westlake. He's already got offers from Houston, Tulane, Colorado State, Texas State, Kansas, and others. So you can get to know him a little better tonight, 7 o'clock right here on the Horn. Keaton Kubeka, the wide receiver from Westlake, will be on the Wednesday Night Flex show. Fight Night at 8, Sports Guys Talking Wrestling at 9. And also, in case you didn't know, each of our weekday shows is going to be talking a little extra high school sports for you every day now. Bucky and Aaron at 8:30 in the morning. Light the Tower at 11:30 a.m., of course, with Snoop and Craig and Jeff. They're already talking some high school sports anyway. You know that. But they're going to focus in at 11:30. We hit it right here at 1:30 and then at 3:45 every day. Rod and Hard will break it down. If you've heard them talking about high school football already and the all-flex team and everything, yeah, they're going to be taking it pretty seriously. Rod Babers is headed down the rabbit hole, kids. He's going to be breaking it down. He's going to be looking at film. He's going to be going out and watching players at these 7-on-7s and during games of the season. So we have piqued Rod Babers' interest when it comes to some high school football.
Oh, is that right? Oh. Rod's going to be at the 7-on-7 this weekend?
I don't know if he's going this weekend. Okay. I don't know if he's going this weekend, but he has talked about getting out and you know, breaking it down, getting the eyeballs on these kids.
I would be there, but I'm going to be at Hyatt Lost Pines with my family this weekend in the aftermath of the Mullet Open.
Now, that's a good place to be.
So that's a bit of a drive to go from Bastrop all the way out to Lake Travis on Saturday a.m.
Speaking of, I'm interested in getting out there for the first time, even though I kind of live out that way towards Bastrop. I've passed by it, but I've never been out to the Hyatt Lost Pines. I have been to, like, back in the day, I remember going out to a Mullet Open when it was at a different location.
When it was out near Lake Travis, probably.
Yeah, but I've never been out there to this resort. Never been there.
Oh, man, the resort is super nice. We make a weekend of it. My immediate family, my wife and kids, and then also my brothers and their families will show up out there. They've got a great pool scene.
Nice.
A bunch of other really cool kids' activities to partake in. I think our kids have pony rides scheduled on Saturday morning, which may free the adults up for perhaps a kidless breakfast. But they know how to do it out there. And that golf course, while it is a tough course, Cam, I don't know if you've ever played Wolf Dancer before. It is an unforgiving course, but it's beautiful at the same time.
It's really nice, but it's also really mean at the same time.
Yeah, it's very gorgeous. It's a great resort. Been able to stay out there a few times. I've also played Wolf Dancer, and it kicks my butt every time. It's a tough golf course. It's designed very tough. Not a lot of spots you can miss it. It'll really challenge you off the tee. There's a couple high dropping slopes. The par 3, I remember. It's like you're hitting down into a valley, feels like. But you just have a pitching wedge, or not even a wedge. Probably have like 56-degree wedge in your hand.
It's one of those courses that if you play it right, if you play the nooks and crannies of that course right, you can probably shoot really well. But to do that, you not only have to play the course a ton to know what's going on, but you need to be pretty darn good, too.
Yeah, you got to be able to pick your spots. And it also helps to if you played it before. The first time I played it, you're looking at holes, you're like, okay, what does this do? And like you have your golf GPS app, but you still don't really fully understand where you want to miss, if you're going to miss, and where you actually want to aim for. There's a couple times where I was in some bunkers, and it's just like, yep, I'm making 5 in this hole. I'm just going to have to accept it.
Where you want to aim for is a big deal out there. You're right.
So you're both saying Bucky is cruel to make the Mullet Open people play this course.
A little bit cruel.
He's
a
being
little bit cruel.
Mean to them.
Although he does play it before getting to the Mullet Open. He just sits back and hides in the shadows and watches other people screw up during the tournament. But it's obviously just an absolute blast. It's a family affair, as I said, for us every year. Excited to hang out with the Whitestone guys. If you're going to be out at the Mullet Open on Friday, Friday. The mini mullet open tomorrow. There's actually tasters of hop water that you can try, and then they'll have cans of it as well you can take out on the course, and it should be an absolute blast on Friday.
Yeah, you're going to need plenty of hop water and regular water this next few days.
Yeah.
Make sure you got plenty of both.
I may bring some pickle juice this year, too.
Not a bad idea.
My buddy Lamar brought a big jar of pickles last year, and we ended up eating the pickles and drinking the juice.
Your favorite Gatorade color, all of that stuff. All right, let's hit this break so we can get to another cool interview that Trey grabbed at South by Southwest. If you're a fan of Kids in the Hall back in the day, they are back in a couple ways. There's a documentary that hits this Friday on Amazon Prime Video, and there's a new season that's already out on Amazon Prime Video. Trey got a chance to talk to the Kids in the Hall guys, and we'll play it for you coming right up on the Horn. Nothing wrong with this one on a Wednesday. I think I can do this one. Booker T and the MGs?
Yes, sir.
There it is. Green Onions, right?
Yeah.
If I got that wrong, my dad wouldn't speak to me anymore. So Booker T and the MGs, part of the 60 Soul Day that Cam's got going for you. We'll get into the 2 o'clock hour and talk a little golf, actually. Got some cuts from Tiger getting ready for the PGA and talking about the Phil situation. Plus, we're talking basketball with the Mavs tonight and a little Texas football with that Jordan Addison update. But right now, let's jump on into where we at, because Trey's got another one of those great interviews. Here we go.
Where are we at in society today?
All right, Trey. Chad, today is Where Are We At, brought to you by Student Loan Payment Lawn Care, slplawncare.com. And this conversation was from my coverage of South by Southwest 2022, specifically on the red carpet at the Zach Theater, with the guys from the Kids in the Hall, the popular Canadian sketch comedy group from the late 80s and 1990s, who have continued to wield their craft over the years through movies and reboots of the series. Well, they are back once again for a couple of different reasons on Amazon Prime. One is a new season of sketches, which came out last Friday, again on Amazon Prime. And coming up this Friday is the documentary on the guys' time together and their impact on comedy. It's called The Kids in the Hall Comedy Punks. During the course of this conversation, you're going to hear from 4 of the 5 members of the group. That's because, unfortunately, Bruce McCulloch, he snuck by me. But I did get to speak with, in order that you're going to hear their voices, starting with Mark McKinney, then Kevin McDonald, Dave Foley, and Scott Thompson. And just for a little bit more of a preface, with Mark McKinney, I did the Skull Crusher routine with him, where I had Trevor Hines, who was the camera guy that day, stick his fingers in front of the camera to where he was quasi-crushing Mark McKinney's head, like the popular sketch from the guys back in the day. So when you hear him say, ouch, that's what he's saying ouch to. And when I say, Trevor, stop doing that, Trevor, that's specifically because of that. So on that note, I hope you enjoy the conversation, starting with Mark McKinney.
Hey there, I'm Trey.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice. Welcome to Austin. Sorry, I'm trying to read your T-shirt really fast.
Oh, it's okay. It's a butcher's diagram of a unicorn.
Is that really?
Yeah.
Okay. Magicalness, veggie bacon, brisket.
Magical twist, yeah. So this is, I think, what the health value of a unicorn. So congratulations on making it to Austin, getting this documentary made, and also the reboot of the series. I guess my first question for you, Mark, is how have things changed comedically for you in terms of what is allowed and what's not over the last 30 to 40 years?
Well, I mean, some things have changed. Some things we've left behind for obvious reasons. But like when we sat down to write this thing, we've always been about trying to make each other laugh. That's the one criteria you have to have in Kids in the Hall. So your sketches have got to make the other 4 laugh. And I was worried that maybe we'd be slow to pick up, but there was a fire hose of sketches and new ideas. So it was really, you know, it worked.
You guys always thrive by remaining fairly apolitical. When you did touch on politics, it seemed like you were willing to bang on both sides. Is that still the case in 2022?
I don't even even think the word politics got uttered in our old writing rooms. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of like we knew we didn't want to do commercial parodies, film parody, anything that would like, and this wasn't even intentional. I mean, this was like an accidental thing where we just kind of wrote our own surreal kind of stuff. But, oh, there we are.
Trevor, stop that. You stop that right now, Trevor.
Ouch. So did we bang on both sides? Yeah, I guess we sort of did, but it was never, do you know what I mean? It was never like, we're going to sit down and write a political sketch now. That was never our thing.
Well, I feel like that's one of the reasons why that series, you know, even the late 80s version stands the test of time. Going back and watching the old sketches now is that it's really not dated in that regard. Love the abstract nature of things as well. Do you have a favorite way to present the material or a favorite, a favorite avenue to go down when trying to make people laugh?
Well, exaggeration's a huge part of it, and knowing how much to put on it, and that's anything, whether you're doing a character or a premise or something like that, like, it's like flooring, I can't describe it, flooring the stupidity. What I really enjoyed about writing this latest thing is that I saw very clearly, almost more clearly than I'd ever seen it before, just like, take your idea, and now let's make it as dumb as we can. And it was so much fun to approach it in that pure sense. Did I give a coherent answer?
Makes complete sense to me, but I'm somebody who loves the abstract as well. So congratulations on the series, the documentary, and thank you so much for the time today. And now, Kevin McDonald. Hi, Kevin. I'm Trey. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Welcome to Austin. You've had fun here so far, I hope.
Yes, until here, you're very serious, and I'm a little scared.
No, that's just my resting face, I promise. I'm a big fan of comedy, a big fan of you guys as well. Was there anybody that you were most interested in?
You laugh on the inside, don't you?
Sometimes. I laugh right here. The laugh starts in the belly.
I sense that.
When you heard about this documentary being made and you started to really understand really what was trying to be done in making it, was there anybody that you were most interested in hearing from about the impact that you guys made on their comedy careers?
Any person you said, or any?
Any one person.
Well, no, but all of them, I was really interested in hearing all their takes, not one in particular, but Dave, Bruce, Mark, Scott, all of them. And it's funny because when I did watch it, I realized all our takes are slightly different.
Which take surprised you the most? And why?
Oh, I forget. It all surprised me a little bit. I'm sorry, I have no examples. Interview me after the movie. I'll see it again. I'll remember better. I'll be a better interviewer. No, you're the interviewer. I'll be a better interviewee, I swear.
No worries. So as far as bringing the series itself back, is there anything off-limits comedy-wise for you guys that was very much in play in the late 80s and 1990s?
Yes, because it's a different time. Yeah. And we were allowed to have free reign in the 90s. So we've had our time to run and be free. It was free, and it was HBO, and they wanted us. And now it's a different time. So there was some off-limits stuff, and we were, I'm saying a lot. And in a way, it was sort of a challenge in a good way, a nice challenge. And we sort of had to write smarter comedy. And I think, if anything, it sort of improved our intelligence. And we enjoy working.
What's the key to good comedy for you, Kevin?
I think getting laughs, but that sounds like a bad answer. But I mean it seriously. Because sometimes in my mind, I've written the funniest thing ever. And then when we do it and they don't get laughs, it's ruined. And so you got to go back to the lab and you have to figure out, okay, you think it's funny and you trust yourself. So something happened between you thinking of the idea and you writing the idea and you rehearsing the idea and you showing to the audience. It's your fault, not the audience, figure it out. And I kind of enjoy that too.
Kevin, thank you so much for the time today. Congratulations on the documentary, the series reboot, and have fun the rest of your time here in Austin.
Thank you.
Up next, Dave Foley.
I'm doing good. You're silhooted. I'm trying to find a way around the lights to see what you look like. There you go.
Oh, the backlight. Okay. Well, congratulations on making it to Austin, the documentary, the reboot of the series. Are you feeling good, pretty good about everything right now?
I'm feeling very good about it. I mean, I think for the documentary, the congratulations goes to those guys, you know, Reg and Paul and Nick. All we did was live the life for 40 years to, you know, as background for the documentary.
And some people may not realize this, but you guys have continued to do things over time.
time, even after the TV show was over with. You had movies, you've done series reboots in various forms or fashion. I'm curious, for you as somebody who is as funny as you are, how has what is acceptable comedy changed for you personally over the last 40 years now?
Well, for me personally, it hasn't changed at all. To me, acceptable comedy is anything that you have an honest argument for and anything that you can defend intellectually. And my view has always been everything and everybody should be held open to scrutiny. And there shouldn't be any, you know, and because we all benefit from knowing when we're ridiculous. And that includes us.
No doubt about that. Do you have a favorite specific sketch from the old TV show?
Favorite sketch? I guess one favorite is the Citizen Kane. I still tour every once in a while, and I still love performing it with Kevin. I also really love performing the Chicken Lady sketch with Mark.
How has the Citizen Kane sketch evolved over that time?
Oh, it's gotten much bigger. It's a lot more yelling. It's become much more physical on stage.
It's like your own Peter versus the Chicken from Family Guy a bit?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know the reference, but it has definitely... Kevin and I talked about it. I said that actually when we do the sketch live, it's very different from what it was on the TV show, and it's really much better. So we've had 30 years to perfect it. No
doubt about that. And last thing, Dave, I have to thank you because I've always been drawn to radio and pop culture. It's what eventually led to me getting in the business, and that has evolved into podcasting now. And you were obviously an integral part of that with News Radio. So thank you for your role on that show.
Thank you.
It's crazy to think back to just the ensemble cast that was assembled. I mean, Stephen Root, who's become one of the great character actors. Andy Dick is obviously who he was. The great Phil Hartman, rest in peace. And then, of course, the guy who played the crazy conspiracy theorist janitor, Joe Rogan, who I'm a big fan of. And I've heard him speak fondly of you over the years on his podcast. I'm curious, though, whenever you guys were working together back in the 1990s, did you ever think that he may be one of the most influential voices in the entire world?
I would never have anticipated it. I've always known Joe to be one of the most curious human beings I've ever met, and a guy who really, you know, is always trying to learn stuff and trying to understand things. I mean, that's the set. Like, I mean, I don't know. You know, people will curse, but I don't know too many people that could, you know, carry on a 3-hour conversation with Sir Roger Penrose about microtubules in the brain, you know? I think the people who haven't, you know, people have a lot of people who don't know Joe have a very narrow view of him, but he's a very expansive, very smart, and a very caring guy. I mean, he's a very, very decent man.
No doubt about that. Well, Dave, thank you so much for the time today, man. And best of luck and thanks.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
And finally, Scott Thompson. I'm Trey. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Trey. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I love that jacket.
Thank you very much, Trey. Yeah.
It's very Texas.
I'm totally dressed for Texas. Yeah.
And by the way, it transitions seamlessly if you ever have anything to do in Calgary too, correct?
Absolutely. Yes. So this has been in my closet for years and years waiting for the right moment. And this is the moment.
And here we are. And welcome to Austin. And congratulations on the documentary, the series. I'm curious for you as somebody who has been funny for so long, how has what is acceptable for the sake of comedy changed for you over the last 35 to 40 years now?
A lot. A lot. Every generation shatters taboos, then creates new ones. So that's an interesting thing to see, that people go, oh, we'll vanquish this phantom, but we will create new ones. So that's been interesting, us discovering what you can and can't say. And there's a lot today. It's definitely a very sensitive time.
What can't you say or do that? No?
Right now. You'll see it in the series.
All right. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
But there's a lot. Yeah.
What's your favorite sketch from back in the day?
I don't really have a favorite sketch. I maybe dipping areas. which is the restaurant sketch, which is actually, those characters are in the new series. It's about, the five of it's a group scene, and we're all, it's basically five people working in a kitchen, the waiters, the cook, and all that, trying to create the perfect, I don't know if you know the scene, desserts, and I love that because it's making something out of nothing, and it's so subtle and beautifully shot and written and performed. It's probably my favorite piece. I think it's just a beautiful piece of comedy.
How much of a conversation went into making sure to pay homage to some of the older stuff while also making the newer series its own thing, too?
Well, quite a bit. I mean, really, we just write what we want. We write what makes us laugh. So we knew that there would be characters that would come back. But there wasn't like a discussion about how many we would bring back. It really was just what we chose. So we didn't say we have to have this character or we have to have that character. No, we just wrote what we thought was funny, and then Amazon would say no, yes. A lot of no's.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for the time today. Congratulations on the documentary, the new series as well, and enjoy the rest of your time in Austin.
Thank you very much. Take care.
And again, that documentary hits Friday on Amazon Prime Video, and the new season of The Kids in the Hall is out there. Amazon Prime Video, if you want to see those interviews with the video and see the attempted crushing of the head that Trey referenced, you can check out booksonpod.com.
Not going to lie, it was pretty awesome getting Mark McKinney to say ouch after Trevor was pinching his head down doing the skull crusher bit. You can't really appreciate that one just by listening to the audio, so I do highly recommend checking out the video at booksonpod.com.
Check that one out if you like, and certainly check out that documentary coming on Friday. Be a good one, especially maybe if you're not as familiar with the show. Learn some things about it on that documentary, and then jump on in. All right, 2 o'clock hour coming up. Tiger Woods with comments on the PGA, but also he was asked about Phil Mickelson. Has some interesting comments we'll dig into. Mavs getting ready for Western Conference Finals Game 1, and the Longhorns still hoping Jordan Addison picks burnt orange. We'll get you those updates on the Horn.